This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Thousands of Maryland high school students were among those demonstrating in Washington, D.C. today for stricter gun control. It was a week ago today that the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, killed 17 people. President Trump is meeting with some of the Florida students, teachers, and parents in Washington this afternoon. The White House says the president's holding a listening session to determine how to improve school safety. In Florida today, thousands of students also rallied, including many from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. They're also meeting with state lawmakers there and, again, demanding action on gun control. Outside the Florida State Capitol, student Spencer Blum spoke with CNN.
We're angry. We're pissed. We're ready for action. We want change. We're going to get change. At this point, yes, the grieving is still there, and it will come back and hit us at only God knows when, but for now, we're angry, we're fired, we're pissed, and we're ready to make ourselves be heard.
Around the country, students and others are mobilizing after the shooting. Thousands of people are expected to attend walkouts and marches that are planned around the country, including here in Massachusetts. At last check on Facebook, thousands of people indicated that they will attend what's being called a March for Our Lives on Boston Common on March 24th. Well, today on Radio Boston, we're going to hear from some local students and some lawmakers, business leaders, academics, and we hope to hear from you as well. Listeners, are you mobilizing after the Florida shooting? Is this a turning point on gun control? Are you following the hashtag never again or enough? And are these students inspirational or do you think they're being used? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So first, we want to hear from some students who will be rallying here in Massachusetts before that protest that we mentioned, which is scheduled for later next month. A nationwide student walkout is planned for March 14th. And at last check, at least 25 Massachusetts schools plan to be involved. Among them, Acton Boxborough High School. Two of its seniors, Rachel Pryke and Mackenzie Cooper, are helping to organize the student walkout. They're on the line. Thanks for being with us, Rachel. So let's say hi to you first.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Okay. Mackenzie, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for being with us during school vacation week. Rachel, start with telling us why you wanted to help organize this walkout.
Well, the fact that there have been 18 mass shootings this year so far, and it's only into February and nothing has changed with gun control, it made us realize that we really wanted to do something. And the fact that the amount of people that are dying still isn't changing people's minds on gun regulation shows that we really need to show that students aren't safe anymore and that we have a right to education without having to fear for our lives.
So do you feel safe in your school, Rachel?
Personally, I do feel safe, but I also think that at this point, no one can guarantee our safety anymore because there's no predicting a school shooting, and we could never know when it's going to happen. Yes, some people show warning signs, but there's at this point, no one can guarantee that we are going to be 100% safe.
Mm-hmm. Mackenzie, this nationwide student walkout that will be happening next month, including at Acton Boxborough, it's supposed to last for, what, 17 minutes, 1 minute for each victim of the Florida shooting. Is that right? What's going to be happening at Acton Boxborough in particular?
Yes, correct. So we plan to have everyone that wants to walk out at 10 a.m., and we're going to stand out in the front circle for 17 minutes for the 17 victims, and we plan to hand out fact sheets about the facts of these school shootings and also read off the list of the 17 victims' names, and we plan on also having a moment of silence for the victims lost.
And do you have a specific goal in mind?
The goal is just to get Congress to change what they're doing. They're not doing enough, and we want them to change. We want them to make more gun regulations and laws because not enough is being done and too many lives are being lost.
I asked Rachel this, Mackenzie. Do you feel safe in your school?
I do. I agree with Rachel. I think that in Acton, I feel safe, but again, you never know where a school shooting is going to occur, so there's always that chance inside your head that's, could it be me?
Rachel, what do you hear from other students and from your teachers and the adults in your life about what you're doing here, about organizing this?
We definitely did not expect to get as much support as we have, and we're so thankful for it. We only expected about 50 people, and we have over 354 members, and they're not just students. They're teachers, there's parents, they're local politicians, and everyone is definitely very supportive of what's happening, and they agree that even though they aren't students in the school, they agree that something needs to be done, and parents should be able to not worry about sending their children to schools, and teachers should be able to teach a class without worrying what could possibly happen.
Why do you think it was the Florida shooting that caused this type of reaction? Any thoughts on that, Rachel?
I definitely think that nowadays the media makes everything a lot bigger. And I know personally when Sandy Hook happened, I was only in, I think, seventh grade. So I understood what was happening, but I didn't understand the extent of it. But now being a senior in high school, I definitely understand what it really means and what actually is happening and the fact that this is happening way more often than it should, and it shouldn't even be happening to begin with.
Mackenzie, I'm wondering, do you also plan to attend the March on Boston Common on March 24th?
Yes, I do. I plan to do as much as I possibly can now that I'm kind of involved and I'm being active in this. So I plan to do the walkout. I plan to do the march. And I think there's also another march happening on April 20th, I believe, and I plan to attend all that I can to help with this cause.
So you're going to organize as much as possible, and the thrust for both of you really is gun control.
Yes.
Rachel, yeah. You too.
Yes, it is. Stricter gun regulations, banning the sales of assault rifles, everything that we can to make the use of guns so much safer.
I'm wondering if either of you would like to talk about this a little bit, because yesterday some of the Florida students went to the Florida State House where lawmakers tabled or took off the table a proposed ban on assault rifles like the one that was used in the Parkland shooting. And the students were very emotional when lawmakers took no action there. Did you watch that? And how did you feel about that? Because here we are, we have this very raw, emotional moment. The students are there, they're watching the lawmakers, and yet the lawmakers took no action.
Personally, I think...
Rachel, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Personally, I think that they need to be taking it a lot more serious than they are. I know personally, just to get my driver's license, I had to do 12 hours of instructed driving, another 40 hours with my parents, and I still couldn't pass my driving test if I couldn't parallel park. But the fact that people can walk in and just easily get a gun and cause a lot more harm is just ridiculous to me. And I think that Congress needs to realize that this is an actual issue and they need to have regulations or else the number of people dying is just going to increase and it's not going to stop anytime soon.
Mackenzie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think personally, banning assault rifles is one of the most important things we could do to stop things like this. I mean, many of the most recent shootings have been an AR-15 was the gun used, and it's kind of just ridiculous because there's not really any use for an AR-15 besides killing a lot of people in a short amount of time. It's a military-grade weapon, and I think my right to live outweighs your right to own a gun whose sole purpose is to kill a lot of people quickly.
All right. Mackenzie Cooper and Rachel Pryke are both seniors at Acton Boxborough High School, and they're helping to organize events in response to the Florida school shooting last week. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Listeners, we're talking about activism, particularly the activism in response to the Florida school shooting and young students mobilizing for change. How about you? Will you be attending some of the events that the students are planning? Or do you think that you'll do something else? Or do you think these students are being used as pawns? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Joining us in the studio is Sasha Costanza-Chalk. She's an associate professor of civic media at MIT and a faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center at Harvard University. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So some say that this is an extraordinary moment for youth activism. Is it?
It absolutely is, and it's an encouraging moment, an exciting moment. We have, students who personally experienced their friends being killed in this incident, and they're highly networked, they're active on social media, and they're able to speak for themselves in a way that, say, Sandy Hook victims were not able to. Hmm. So the combination of the moral power of the position these students have with the networked social media space, with the broadcast media coverage that's happening, creates a kind of perfect storm for this student mobilization.
Was there ever another time that some of us might remember, or maybe not, in history, where we would see activists this young, really, sort of galvanized by an issue like this and demanding that their leaders take action?
Yeah, absolutely. As a social movement studies scholar, if we look back through history, we find young people, including people as young as high schoolers and middle schoolers, or what would be equivalent to that, active in the forefront of many social movements throughout history. We could look back to the birth of the modern labor movement and look to Lowell, where you had young women working in factories there at the birth of the modern labor movement. Or you could fast forward to 2006, where you had nationwide walkouts by middle school and high school students for immigrant rights against the Sensenbrenner bill at the time, which was defeated.
Mm. I'm wondering, you know, it's so soon. It was a week ago today, right? Emotions are really raw. Is some folks say this is reactionary at this point. Maybe some lawmakers are thinking that when they're not taking action and they think things will, quote unquote, die down after a while, right? When it's not so intense. Is it bad timing, or is this typically how it works?
I mean, there's no better time to act than at the moment when the national attention is focused on the incident. These happen on a weekly or biweekly basis, and there's no particular reason to wait around for another one to take place. We also have in Emma Gonzalez and some mm-hmm. of the other students, very, very powerful, clear, and articulate voices. They have a strong analysis of what's going on. We haven't mentioned the role of the National Rifle Association yet on the show, and these students really understand the reason why we don't have gun control is because of the lobbying power of the weapons industry. And so they're calling that out. They're calling it out on national TV and across social media. Their statements about it are going viral, and they're really not, they're perfectly positioned, and this is the right moment.
What about taking the approach that the students we just heard from and other students around the country are taking for a walkout and march and doing it nationwide and coordinating? Is that unusual, or is that typically how other things have been done? When you mention Lowell and you mention other things, I mean, how does this compare, I guess, to other forms of youth activism that did result in change?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we talk about successful social movements, we often have a combination of a strong moral actor. We have splits between elites. That's certainly the case in this particular issue area. And what we have now that's somewhat new is the broad access to networked information and communication technologies. So social media is important in terms of how quickly it enables people to organize, mobilize, and develop local instances of actions that they're seeing. So if you go to the Facebook page for the main action, you'll see that they're listing all of the actions city by city as students step up to organize them. Hmm. So that helps.
You know, there's been a little bit of pushback about these students, and there are conspiracy theories, right? Social media can also do that, right? It can push against these students. And one theory was that some of the students that we're seeing in television news reports are actually paid actors, and that was floating around on social media a lot. And Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School senior David Hogg responded to that theory on CNN. Let's listen.
These people saying this is absolutely disturbing, and I'm not an actor in any sense, way, shape, or form. I'm the son of a former FBI agent, and that is true. But as such, it is also true that I go to Stoneham Douglas High School, and I was a witness to this. I'm not a crisis actor. I'm somebody that had to witness this and live through this, and I continue to have to do that.
And so, Sasha, what I'm wondering here is, you know, that's one form of attack, but the attacks could get vicious. Is it going to be especially difficult for students to handle these types of conspiracy theories and attacks? Are they ready to do that?
I mean, I think that the students so far have demonstrated that they're very ready to handle that. They've, in the space of a few short days, they've managed to quickly disentangle themselves from some of these conspiracy theories that are circulating. They've managed to critique the thoughts and prayers rhetoric that's kind of the boilerplate that gets rolled out, especially by politicians who've taken large contributions from the NRA. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, you'll see today there's circulating a beautiful poster that says the time for thoughts and prayers is over. It's time. The time to act is now. Mm-hmm. So I think that these young people have grown up in the age of social media, and so they're very effectively leveraging its affordances to counter these types of attacks. That said, yes, it will get vicious. There will be a combination of AstroTurf organizations attacking them, everyday people who have a different political opinion, and probably we'll see activity. In fact, there are some indications we're already seeing some activity from the Russian trolls and botnets participating in this online conversation as well. So they should be prepared for attacks against their character and so on and so forth. But I think that they are.
Okay. Well, I want to take some calls because I'm told our lines are full. So we have lots of folks wanting to join in this conversation. Andre Ravenel is calling from Fitchburg. He's a school superintendent. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good. I'm glad to get a chance to say something. Quickly, one of the things that strikes me is kind of their, as adults, their hypocrisy that we have so often where we're constantly saying that young people are not getting involved, they're not taking their world seriously, they're too consumed with their own needs. And I think this is really an opportunity where they're showing that that's not the case. That said, I also wanted to say anyone who's thinking that these young people are taking these actions because they're being coerced has not been around high school students in a long, long time because coercing young high school students today with all of the access that they have to information is very difficult. And lastly, I wanted to say I was just sitting in my office a couple hours ago, received an email and a phone call from one of our high school students, an incredibly professional and caring and well-informed, asking me, how can we go about responding to this issue? What can we plan together with the high school principal and the staff for March 14th? So I think this is really an opportunity for us to see the real face of youth in the United States, and I'm very proud of them. I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Superintendent, thanks very much for your call. I also want to get to Teresa, who is calling from Newton. Teresa, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I agree so much with what the superintendent just said. It's a disgrace for anyone to try to undermine the efforts of the kids that are standing up for the right to be protected and asking adults to take responsible steps to see that that happens. I have two kids. They're 18. They're 22. I have been involved with them and their community of friends. These are passionate, articulate kids, and they're not kids. We keep saying they're kids. They're young adults who are ready to take on the responsibility of being adults. And I'm so inspired and hopeful because they are just responding to things with a change that I think we need, with clarity, with honesty, with directness. They're not tearing down other people to make their points. They're simply making their points.
Okay. Teresa, thanks so much for the call. I guess I want to ask Sasha this. I mean, is this really sort of saying to the folks who are concerned that perhaps young people, young adults, have really been self-interested, have surrounded themselves with their telephones, you know, all of the things that we hear about all of the folks, all of the things that parents and other folks are probably afraid of? You know, they're too self-absorbed. They're too worried about succeeding, right? Does this show that maybe there's, you know, that those theories are not really true?
I mean, I do believe that frame on young people is a very negative frame that doesn't reflect the reality. Young people are participating in many social movements today. They're struggling to save the environment from climate change. They're at the forefront of Black Lives Matter. They're fighting against the school-to-prison pipeline. Queer undocumented youth have been involved in sitting in congressional offices to win the DACA program initially, and now they're leading the fight to maintain it. And now these students are hopefully going to help us win gun control. So I think they're incredibly active and involved. It's always been the case. If you look at Claudette Colvin was 14 years old when before Rosa Parks, she, boycotted the segregated bus system in Montgomery. We don't know her name as well because various reasons she wasn't promoted by the civil rights movement at the time to be the figurehead. But very young people have always been involved in American political movements.
Okay. I want to take a call from George, who is calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. George, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I think I am well. I'm a Vietnam vet and also an owner of guns. I think that these young folks have made some superb points. The main one that I reacted to was how hard it is to get your driver's license. Hmm. If we don't get our legislators off their backsides and ensure that they understand that this is a serious issue, we adults are going to lose the game. We need to get automatic weapons restricted. It's not that complicated. It's really very simple, in my opinion, of course.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, George, thanks so much for the call. Maybe the young people will do it and the adults haven't been able to. Well, speaking of trying to get legislators off their backsides here, as we mentioned, President Trump is holding a listening session in Washington today with some of the students and parents who were affected by last week's Florida shooting. On Twitter, the president has shown some support for background checks, and he also directed the Justice Department to move to ban devices like bump stocks, and those were the devices that were used in the Las Vegas shooting. On the state level, Massachusetts lawmakers are considering so-called red flag laws. Those would allow a court to take guns away from people who are deemed dangerous. State Representative David Linsky of Natick is the sponsor of a bill that would put a red flag law in place in Massachusetts, and that bill is currently before a legislative committee. When we spoke with him earlier today, he said his measure would strengthen current laws.
This would fill in an existing loophole in Massachusetts law. Right now, if a family member believes that someone in their household is a danger to himself or to others and has firearms, and they go to the police, there's very little that the police can actually do. This would allow them to seek an order from a district court or a local court and get the guns out of the household, away from the person on a temporary basis for up to 10 days. And then after 10 days, there'd be a full hearing before a judge with full due process rights to be able to make sure that the guns are taken away.
Mm-hmm. Why not, though, do something like a Section 12 that we already have in Massachusetts? If you think that someone right now is a danger to themselves or others, regardless of guns, you can ask that that person be involuntarily committed to mental health treatment or at least for an evaluation to see if they are, in fact, dangerous.
Well, that's a much more complicated process, much more time involved process, and it involves in trying to find a psychiatrist or a psychologist to make a formal evaluation of someone. This allows the police to work much quicker on a weekend or at night to keep real tragedies from happening. Look at the case in Florida where the alleged shooter, Nicholas Cruz, the police had been to his house apparently over 30 times. And the family members and people who knew him were complaining about how dangerous he was and how they were afraid something was going to happen. But under Florida law, and like under Massachusetts law, there really was nothing that they could do to get the guns out of the household. Once you are a legal gun owner, once you've complied with the applicable laws, whether it's in Florida or in Massachusetts, it's very difficult to get those guns away from someone. In the states that have this, what they're finding is that when the order is served, the person usually seeks mental health treatment. So that's a win. That's a benefit.
Now, of course, civil rights are a big issue here. They are whenever there's a talk of involuntarily doing something to someone like this. And the National Rifle Association has expressed some concerns about that, saying this would be infringing on someone's Second Amendment rights based on third-party allegations. What do you say?
Well, quite frankly, that's why we put in all these due process protections here, so that it's not just somebody willy-nilly complaining about a neighbor or about somebody.
You know, because of that tragedy in Florida, what we're talking about today is activism, particularly activism on the part of young people and what we're seeing in that regard to try to make changes so something like this doesn't happen again. Do you feel that this tragedy could influence your colleagues at the State House to pass this legislation? Or where do you feel we're at and how does the Florida shooting affect the debate on Beacon Hill right now?
Quite frankly, politicians who hold elected office, whether they be on Beacon Hill or in Washington, need to be aware of the passion and the activism of these young people. And I'm very much heartened by what I see in the future, by what they're doing. I know that my colleagues are very, very much moved on this issue. And even though we have some of the most effective and safest gun laws in the state, in the country, in Massachusetts, we know that there's always more work to be done, and there's a lot of momentum behind this bill right now.
So you think it'll pass?
If we can get it to the floor, it'll pass. That much I know. So we're working very hard to get this onto the agenda.
All right, State Representative David Linsky, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Bye.
I'd like to get another perspective for a minute now from someone who thinks that the students who are advocating for gun control are advocating for the wrong thing. He also has a position on this red flag law. Jim Wallace is executive director of the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Deborah. Thanks for having me on.
So what do you think about this red flag law that we just talked about with State Representative Linsky?
Well, I mean, aside from the Second Amendment issues, I think it's a very cruel and dangerous bill because of the way it treats people with mental health issues.
What do you mean?
Well, if you look at what the bill does, and again, setting aside the process, if you look at what the bill does, it takes somebody that may have mental health issues, drags them through a court process, and then simply takes their legal guns away, but then sends them on their way. And it lumps in people that may have a temporary crisis in their life that could probably get through it with some good counseling and a good support system, and it lumps them in with the same process to identify somebody who may be the next monster that enters our school and commits carnage. And that is just simply a cruel process because you're exacerbating the mental health issues without actually helping them do anything. And then on the other side, if you truly are identifying the next monster, you're taking their legal guns away and then setting them free. That in itself is really beyond the pale.
So
because if we're identifying the next monster, we're simply taking their guns away and setting them free. Okay, can they work in a school? Can they drive a truck? Can they be practice medicine? So there's so much more to this bill that the average person isn't paying attention to.
So I guess your main concern is that it should have more to it if it's going to do this. Maybe it should mandate mental health treatment and things like that. Would that be right? And civil liberties issues as well? I just want to make sure that I know what your main concerns
are. Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, we really need to be a lot more compassionate and comprehensive in how we deal with this. So, you know, one of the things that really stuck with me was after Newtown. I think the staff said I did about 150 interviews after Newtown. And I started receiving emails from perfect strangers all around the country begging for mental health help for their relative, their loved one, whatever it is. I mean, I had one woman that emailed me many times, you know, I have a severely bipolar son who can get violent, and if I bring him to the hospital, you know, she went through the whole thing, and I said, it really stuck with me, because if these people are reaching out to me, how bad is the system out there? So we need to really look at the mental health.
Absolutely,
issue.
But what do we do about these assault rifles, Jim? What do we do? These kids are saying ban these assault rifles. President Trump now does seem to want regulations to ban bump stocks, and those were used in the Las Vegas shooting. But
right.
But when you hear about these horrific things, I mean, doesn't some action have to be taken about the guns, and especially these assault rifles?
Well, if you look at the Aurora movie theater shooting, you look at Newtown, you look at now Parkland in Florida, other than the gun they used, the common denominator is severe mental health issues. So if we actually take care of the underlying problem, we really don't have to worry about what kind of guns are out there because they're only owned by lawful people. And one of the
But no, because the guns were the common denominator too, though.
But the common denominator only in the hands of somebody who has severe mental health issues. They're not a common denominator. I mean, there are millions and millions of these types of guns owned by lawful citizens every day. But in the hands of somebody who's severely mentally ill and angry at the world, like anything else, it can be a very severe situation. So if we just look at the gun and not the human element, we do so at our own peril. And it's one of the things I've been hammering home for now for 4 years. Nobody wants to do the hard work. Nobody wants to actually dig into the mental health issue. And look, if you talk to mental health experts, which I have, they will tell you the vast, vast majority of people with mental health issues are not violent. They don't want to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. They're just going through a rough period in their life. But there are a small number, but they are there, of people who probably shouldn't be allowed to walk amongst us. And we have to come to grips with that, and we have to find help for them. But we also have to be compassionate to the people who just need temporary help, and we don't want to stigmatize them and destroy their lives.
Right, right. But what do we do about the guns? Nothing, then?
Well, again, if we deal with the human element, we don't have to worry about the guns, and that goes with criminals as well. You know, Massachusetts, as much as a lot of people love to say it, the narrative is actually a false narrative. The strict gun laws that have been passed in Massachusetts have been an abject failure because, for the most part, they're so convoluted, nobody knows how to use them and prosecute
well,
them.
Well, Jim, I'm sorry we're just about out of time, but I appreciate sure. you taking the time to join us today. Jim Wallace, Executive yeah. Director of the Gun Owners Action League. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deborah.
Okay, Sasha Kostanzichuk, who is with us in the studio, I'm just wondering what you make of that. And we've heard this also from President Trump. It's the mental health issue that needs to be addressed and not the guns. What do you say to that?
Well, I agree that we need to support people with mental health issues, but the American Psychological Association says that fewer than 1% of firearm homicides are committed by people diagnosed with mental illnesses. So we need to ban these guns, especially the assault weapons, as you said.
Mm-hmm. I also just want to bring up something that we heard earlier today from Congressman Bill Keating, because we spoke with him today about this resulting youth activism around the Florida shooting. And we just pulled a little bit of a clip of that interview, and he brought up an interesting point. Let's listen.
I'll tell you, if there's any sliver of good that can come out of this, it's this activism by so many of the young people, not just in this issue, but I've been concerned, frankly, before. So many decisions were being made for these young people, decisions about spending their money before they even get it, taking away opportunities for their health care, saddled with debt they can't get out of for decades of their lives, or worried about the environment that we're going to leave in. I think you're going to see this movement expand even beyond the issue of gun safety. You're going to see it expand, and I hope it's true, into all these other areas where they're directly affected and have a stake in the action.
So Sasha Kostanzichuk, essentially Congressman Keating says, you know, there were already simmering feelings among young people, dissatisfaction, uncertainty about the future, and the Florida shooting is a tangible event over which they can start to exercise their political muscles. Do you think that's what's going on here?
I absolutely do think that that's what's happening. I also think it's excellent to see support from adult allies for this youth-led movement. So, for example, everything from celebrities pledging, $1 million to support right. the march, to Move On today sent out an email to their big list supporting these young activists, to the Women's March stepping up to also get behind these youth leaders. So, yes, we can follow their lead, and also they need support from all of us.
Okay, let's take some calls. Isaac is calling from Winchester. Isaac, you're on the air.
Thank you. My thought is you wouldn't need, under any circumstance I could imagine, an AR-15 or a comparable automatic weapon to defend yourself. And the framers of the Constitution, when they were writing the Second Amendment, their thought process was the right to bear arms was to defend people's liberties from a tyrannical government. But I don't think at this point it would be possible or anyone would ever want people to take up arms against the government.
Isaac, are you a high school student?
Yes, I'm a junior currently.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be participating in these events that are happening because of the Florida shooting?
I'm likely to, right. but I still need to consider a few things before making a final decision.
Okay. Well, Isaac, thanks very much for the call. We're going to have to wrap up, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. Sasha Costanza-Chuck is with us in the studio. Let's just say in the past half hour, we've heard from students and politicians and gun owners, our listeners. Is this the moment for gun control reform, or are you skeptical?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think if anything's going to break through the impasse that we've been at for so many years, it's going to be this activism led by these young people who are directly affected and with support from all of us and from all of their allies.
All right. Sasha Costanza-Chuck is an associate professor of civic media at MIT and a faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center at Harvard University. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.